The Fan on Demand. The best NHL analysis and insight. It's what's on the lunch menu. Eat up. This is Hockey Central at Noon on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Packed house here at Hockey Central at Noon, Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on Sportsnet. Doug McLean and Nick Kypreos on their way to Halifax. Darren Millard may be on his way to Lourdes. He is still sick, but hopefully returning shortly. Jeff Merrick in for the aforementioned Darren Millard. To my left, Scott Morrison. My right, John Shannon. Yeah, that's you, John. A lot of you on the network today. Well, you'll be on the podcast a little bit later on, too, John. Looking forward to that.
I'm going to save up then.
Okay.
Let these guys, for the podcast.
The big stars of the hour this morning on the Brady Lang Show, it was Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph. And now we announce the pregame, postgame, and intermission crew of Gord Stellick, Rick Natras. Welcome aboard, gentlemen. Congratulations. First day on duty Saturday before the season opener for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Welcome aboard, again, guys.
Thank you.
Great to be aboard.
And big plans?
Well, we're still figuring that out, right? We just met.
Yeah. So. Well, it's no. I've had a tough week because last week I was one of the top 13 general managers in Leaf history. Now I'm one of the top 14. So I've gone down a notch.
We'll be the judges.
Well, you can't, whatever. So
there's only 14.
I'm still like licking my wounds. What? You're going to give someone
the youngest.
Punch twice.
Oh, okay. Punch twice. So yeah, no, we're like, you know, we're all pumped about things, obviously, about the, you know, in my case, National Hockey League, you can't beat the Toronto Maple Leaf brand. We've got to work for the Hockey Night in Canada brand, you and Scott as well, and John for so many years. So that's been a great brand. And then, of course, you realize the Fan brand as well. So it's a perfect tie-in, and we're thrilled, pumped, because they're going to go at it full bore.
Should be fantastic. Now, will the Maple Leafs go at it full bore? And who are the Maple Leafs this year? I suppose the first discussion around the table. And starting with, who do you think the netminder is going to be this year? Did they start with Reimer and Scrivens and just see what happens? Or in a shortened season, can you even take that gamble?
Well, I think personally right now that that's the route they're going to take. I mean, the Luongo thing is still out there. We don't know. Well, John certainly probably knows more than most about what that deal might take.
I've been really right on that.
But I mean, just a case of, you know, we've heard lots of rumors about Gardner and he's been out. So how can they make the deal if they would make that deal with him there, with him not being able to play? So a lot of speculation. So I would have to think that Reimer and Scrivens would be the guys that they start with.
Well, I guess one of the questions is, does the change of manager change the appetite to make that deal if the appetite was there?
I actually think two things changed it, Scott. I think the way that the collective bargaining agreement was finally written, and they weren't as punitive on teams that had these long contracts, because that was all part of the process, was these guys that had these players under long contract were going to pay for it somehow, some way. And that gap between, not necessarily this year, but next year when it was supposed to be a $60 million cap versus almost a $65 million cap, well, when you're making $5.3 million or whatever the number is, that made a lot of sense for the Canucks to having to get down to under $60 million was going to be an issue. It's not as much of an issue now. Listen, I've gone this far. I still think it's going to happen. But, in my heart, think it's going to happen.
But what is this? You know, you look at the Leafs situation and Corey Schneider now with Vancouver, a guy they developed, whether it's Luongo or somebody else, why can the Leafs not develop young goaltenders? Like Felix Potvin was the last one. Maybe Kenny Regatta before that. I mean, it's gone on and on that you had to go, and Cliff went and got Grant Fuhr, who just said, I need a goaltender. And then you signed Curtis Joseph. Then you signed Ed Belfour.
You draft Pogue, though, right?
But no, but he didn't work out.
But my point is, I understand that. But my point is that they tried to draft somebody in the higher levels, and it didn't work out for them. So
he was a third round pick.
Who's higher?
I know what you're saying. When was the last time this team developed anybody? Forget about goaltender.
No, but you need goaltender.
Blue chipper. Like you can argue. A lot of people say Wendell would be one. I would disagree with that. Wendell certainly was a force and everything like that. But you couldn't.
That's a long time ago.
No, but my point is that's the last.
I didn't have gray hair.
But my point is the fact is they haven't had one in so long, and Wendell's as close as they've gotten, and we're talking a long time now, 25 plus years. How does that occur in an organization that is so rich and has been around so long?
But Caberlet and some of those guys, I mean, Europeans. But
it's always been an accelerated rebuild. And yes. you look at, you know, what would it... What,
stability is the biggest.
Ifs and buts, right? If you're going to build through the draft, the Leafs could be looking at a situation where they have been up and down the pole with this one and around the block. Tyler Seguin and Dougie Hamilton.
Yeah.
Complicate, making it even worse. You look at who they threw in last year when they drafted Tyler Biggs. They threw in the second round pick to Anaheim. That turned into John Gibson.
Yeah.
So you could be looking at John Gibson, Dougie Hamilton, Tyler Seguin. You know, at a certain point, don't you have to say as a general manager, the best thing I can do... And, you know, Carolina's a great example of this. Just leave this thing alone for a while.
Well,
it's
been
tough
as
a GM.
Would have been better about 5, 6, 7 years ago. Yes. But the best thing you can do is someone plays like Brian Elliott did last year for the St. Louis Blues. I mean, really, whether you draft well or didn't draft well, it's if it's a poker game to get in the playoffs, you got to have goaltending to ante in. You have to. So whether it's James Reimer, who seemed to be playing well until he took that hit from the Montreal Canadiens last year, you know,
again,
maybe,
question
maybe
mark
enough.
Around well, him. I've always felt there was a question mark around him, giving him the full reins and all that. Also, I don't care who you have in the net. If you're giving up 6 to 8 scoring chances in the high slot where they can tee it up and take their time to pick the spots, you're going to have problems no matter who's in that. So team defense, certainly goaltending is a big aspect, but team defense can certainly help the Leafs a lot.
But to your point, general managers along the way over the years with the Leafs have hit the accelerator.
Yeah.
Always.
And made deals that they probably shouldn't have made at that time because the team wasn't in a position where that maxed out. Are they at a position now where they have to make that move for a goaltender? Are they a playoff team?
No.
Legit? Or is this just something to say,
is this
throw
for
a bone
fans?
If you can get there?
No, you know, they're a playoff team as much as anybody's a playoff team if they have good goaltenders.
Everybody's got an A going into school, you know, right, when you start the first day.
Whatever it may be. I mean, it's a 48-game season. You think back last time the New York Rangers won the Stanley Cup, didn't make the playoffs till the final day of that 48-game season in 1995. So I think, and not just because we have the games for the first time on the Fan or half the games and we're doing shows every game, that, you know, selling it that way. But it's an interesting, it's really uncharted waters this year where the first few games are like exhibition games and training camp. And there's going to be a couple teams, and why not the Toronto Maple Leafs, that maybe can take advantage of it.
All the more reason, if that's going to be the approach, all the more reason that you better have solid goaltending.
Yes.
That you better be able to, when your team is learning how to play with your line mate or with your defensive partner.
For the coach that you have now. Right?
For the coach you have now. All to be able to say, okay, if we make a mistake, we know the guy behind us is going to save us.
Yeah.
And the question, the previous general manager, I remember sitting in his office at the end of May, and Brian said, "We need a veteran goaltender. We need a vet. Reimer can be a good goaltender. He's still a ways away. We need a veteran goaltender. We need to go find a veteran goaltender." I don't think that philosophy has changed. I think they need to go find a veteran goaltender.
Well, most definitely. Where do you go? Maybe Minnesota at the end of this year. There's other places. Yeah, there's other places. But really, the Bernier kid out of L.A. that hasn't been proven.
Veterans,
but my point is, that's the thing.
You're pointing right back to one guy, Rick. One guy.
Well, what I'm saying to you, though, John, is the fact is, who is that guy? If Luongo's the guy, I disagree completely because, first and foremost, the 10 years. Secondly, he's going to be one of those guys, in my eyes, that had a good career but didn't win the dance, you know, the dance contest. And I don't think that's something that the Leafs need right now is that, as you said, the 64.3, it makes it a little bit more appealing bringing him here at $5.3 million a year times 10. But at the end of the day, is he the guy that's going to help this team that really needs help in other areas as well?
The cap, by the time this collective bargaining agreement ends, and I can't believe I just said that.
Or 10 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And we get to that point in Luongo's deal. $5.5 million for a goalie is going to be cheap.
But you know something?
It's going to be cheap.
Let's move on from the goaltending. Yeah. What's a Dion Phaneuf, for example?
Yeah.
Okay, it's not, you know.
I agree, Gordon.
Yeah, I mean, right. These are the types of things. Like, one. Is he the guy that was a Norris Trophy candidate years ago, or is he the guy that Lars Eller showed the world, let's blow by this guy, and all of a sudden it helped turn the season around?
They were talking about him like he would shoot like MacInnis and hit like Stevens when Roman Hamrlich was his defense partner. But now that he's the guy, the question I think about the Maple Leafs defense, and Ricky kind of hinted at it a second ago, is this defense quick enough and quick enough in their own zone? Because recovery speed, recovery speed in your own zone is crucial. Is this team quick enough in their own zone? So the goaltender, whether it's Luongo, Reimer, Scrivens, whomever, doesn't get exposed.
Yeah, when I look at it, I don't think so. I don't think they're a first-pass team. I also look at a team last year that said they're a fast team. Would you rather be a fast team or a quick team? I'd rather be a quick team because a quick team, to me, holds its position, and then once they have possession, then they take up.
But that's my point is, yes, they're quick.
So does Toronto have those capabilities? No. When you look at their lineup, and again, you know, I find it hard to – these guys are National Hockey players, but they're not – slated in the right spots. If your number one is really your number three, what's your number six? And that's that defense, and it's the same as a center position or your right wing or left wing. If you're perceiving this guy to be your number one guy and he's really a number two or a number three on a good team, what does that do to your lesser guys as the lineup goes down to the third and fourth line? Does the same thing. Guys are playing minutes. They're not capable of playing. If he's an 18-minute guy and he's good at it, and that's what Phaneuf was. He was an 18 to 20-minute guy when he was playing at his peak. Now he's a 25 to 27-minute guy. That kills those good 18 minutes, and we see it as the forwards do it, and we see it as the defensemen in this organization. Out the wrong slots, wrong amount of minutes.
Well, and you know, you see as well, you talk all the numbers that way. I think the other part with any team is, and this is the challenge for Randy Carlyle, get an identity.
Yes.
Like, we're talking all over the place. Like what is this team? And poor Phil Kessel, I think, guy's, what, sixth in scoring last year when he always gets dragged in as if it's been a bust. And at some point, whether it's what Pat Burns did, whether it's what Johnny Tortorella did with the New York Rangers, whether it's what, you know, Paul McLean did with the Ottawa Senators, there's all kinds of different ways. But at least get something, because we're kind of saying it's a mixed bag. And when you start getting an identity, the guys can maybe get a bit of a, you know, that whole truculence thing was there, and it really wasn't the proper identity. And now Randy Carlyle, he's a more physical style coach, so maybe there's a happy program.
His expectations for what his forwards need to do for this team are vastly different than what Ron Wilson expected.
100%.
And that's the one, I mean, even.
And are they capable?
Well, that's a huge question.
That's
the big thing. I mean, when you look at a guy like James Van Riemsdyk, who I think if Ron Wilson was here, we would have heard a lot more publicity about what Van Riemsdyk is supposed to do offensively. But can he handle it in his own zone? Can he handle it in the neutral zone? Will he use his body?
That's the big one, because when Maple Leafs fans will look at James Van Riemsdyk, they'll see a big body. And normally when you see a big body, you assume, oh, he's going to be a big, you know,
presence. Yeah.
I don't. That's not James Van Riemsdyk.
No, I don't think it is either. And I look at the loose puck battles, or puck battles, one on one battles, all that kind of stuff that made the Leafs vulnerable last year. And what Randy Carlyle has said, and what he wants, is we have to turn that in our favor. So that becomes tenacity. That becomes going into.
Don't use those words anymore.
Okay. Truculence.
Truculence.
Don't use those words.
That goes into going into the corner. Coming out with the puck, not hoping to come out with the puck. And I think the mindset last year was, if I come out with the puck, great. If I don't, oh well. And today's Leafs under Randy Carlyle, that's not going to be good enough.
You know, another thing that's a huge plus, though? So I think, because you were there the last lockout, but the Leafs were in the wrong conference. So they played only interconference and opened the season in San Jose and LA and all, you know, remember all that stuff, and only had the Red Wings and that. And here, playing interconference, I think, is an interesting opportunity that you're not going to touch the other 15 teams. And you wonder, unlike the Boston Bruins, man, they gave the Leafs their breakfast time and time again last year. Years ago, the Leafs did the same to the Ottawa Senators. Yeah. And you're wondering if that may be for a team like the Leafs that, you know, is trying to find an identity, that helps it a little bit more.
It'll be tough to find an identity in Randy's system, because he demands so much out of practices, though. And there aren't many days to practice in this system. No. The only good thing for the Leafs is that their longest road trip, to your point, is only three games. I mean, it's not like having to go to the West Coast.
That's
anymore.
A great point, too. There'll be a lot of days off for a lot of these teams. A lot of, like, no, we're not skating, we're just resting today in the shortened season in this sprint. All right, the pre's and the posts are in good hands. Rick Natras, Gord Celek, thanks as always. Saturday night.
That's correct.
The season opener, the big extravaganza. Gord Celek and Rick Natras handling the pre's, the posts, and the intermissions. The Leafs are back on the Fan. And we're back with Hockey Central at noon in a couple of moments. Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on Sportsnet, talking about Roberto Luongo. More on the Maple Leafs, and we'll have a review, I suppose, of what we saw at the Air Canada Centre at noon Eastern on Saturday. The Brian Brick press conference, John. Yeah, we have to, John. We kind of do. It's kind of a big deal in this city. Back in a moment. Keep it here.
Now more Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Welcome back to the program. We should mention as well, as just released by Sportsnet, the pregame program Saturday begins at 5 Eastern and goes right until 7 before the Maple Leafs home opener. And Of course, Gord Stellick.
No, Saturday, and Saturday there in Montreal.
Oh, in Montreal, sorry, rather. We got the Buffalo game on the Monday.
On the 21st.
Yeah. John Shannon, Scott Morrison, Jeff Merrick on the table. Your thoughts on what we saw by way of performance, and I really think it was, on Saturday afternoon at the Air Canada Centre. Scott, you were here covering. John, you were down there. Your thoughts on the Brian Burke press conference and headlines are still coming out of it. And I think it left a lot of people with their, you know, sort of scratching their heads and saying why and saying perhaps if you're someone in the market to hire another general manager, why would you choose this one after what you saw on Saturday? Scott, what do you think?
It was interesting and entertaining, as Brian's press conference are wont to be. Certainly didn't shed any light on the timing, and that's the big question for me. I think if you look at the body of work and the record, you could, you know, it's easy to make a case that a change could be necessary or warranted. But just doing it now is the part I can't quite figure out. Did they just discover that he was a kind of a gruff character, or was this a process?
You know what? I truly believe it was a process. I think that, you know, with the new board that came in, I believe it was the first week in August, the board sat down as a group and they were exposed to this. And to this, I mean Brian's, as he would describe it, his brand.
His brand, yes.
And to me, that's I think the learning curve was swift from a corporate side, and I do believe so much of this has everything to do with how the two companies that own 75% of this organization now, Rogers and Bell, how they run their own businesses, how they put people in suits, how they and without trying to use too big of words, how the corporate governance of this company is expected to work in the next little while. And I think in many ways this is going to be an indication of as much what they didn't like about Brian as much as what they want to occur with this company when they do hire a CEO. And that to me is this was the beginning, and this was a hint for all of us to sit back and say, oh, what are they going to do? How are they going to do it? How are they going to manage it?
Well, it's interesting because – you know, Brian's Brian, and we know what the brand is. But the other part of that brand is a guy who was a pretty positive face for that franchise. It wasn't the guy that was truculent, if you will, maybe in the boardroom, but a guy who was out there sleeping on sidewalks for charity and doing, you know, tireless work for the armed forces. And it was an event on Saturday where he got the civilian award, the highest honor you can get from the military in this country. And on it goes that there was a lot of positives that he put that you know, the face of that organization on.
But in the end, I mean, he wasn't hired. I understand what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying.
But he wasn't hired to win awards. He was hired to put the best hockey team on the ice possible. And he was and in all of this, and I mean, it's going to look that I'm really criticizing Brian, but a lot of what happened with all of his public doings, were they more about the building the Maple Leaf brand in the marketplace or building Brian's brand in the marketplace? And I think just the fact that you question that tells you where he is. I have known Brian a long time. I've known him as long as you have, Scott. I like Brian as a person. But you know what? This was something that we got wind of early, that there was going to be some sandpaper between the new board and Brian. And to me, the timing was peculiar, but corporations do things when they think that it's necessary to do things. And I think we're going to get that inclination of what happened.
He didn't manage the sandpaper.
Right. Well, I will tell you right now, Scott, he was told, it was discussed with him over the last 3 or 4 months, hey, you know what? This is a different board. This isn't Larry and his cronies.
Yeah.
You know, you better, and he said, no, it's either me or nothing.
Well,
you know
what? Emphatic Saturday. Did he do it his way?
Right.
Not going to change. So,
and to me, as someone who has been dismissed, I will tell you right now, of all the successes I've had, and there's a couple of successes in my career, I've learned more from being fired than I have from the successes. And I would suggest that Brian should probably take a step back and think that maybe he can learn a little bit from something like this, something like what went on with John McCaughan, Stan McCammon in Vancouver. I think you have to learn. You learn more from your mistakes than you do from your successes. And I would suggest Brian, as a person, should probably take a step back and say, "Okay, am I doing something right? Am I doing something wrong? Did I say the right things on Saturday to tell the hockey world that I'm the right person to run your organization?" And I think with the way ownership in this league is now, mm-hmm. when you have a bunch of corporations, and then you have a bunch of guys that like toys. I think Brian might be in a little bit of a jeopardy of trying to find another job.
Does he have to find the guy who likes toys, and you foster a relationship
one-on-one, as opposed
to dealing with a board of suits?
That's right.
But that the day of the autonomous general manager is kind of gone.
Done.
I mean, I was watching Brian on Saturday and thinking to myself, he's, you know, wishing for a model to exist that doesn't exist anymore. This idea that, because listen, to Brian's defense too, and Brian does this, he puts people in positions and then leaves them alone and they do their job, and then eventually he judges them and they either get renewed or they get fired. Can argue about the timing of when he made the decision of Ron Wilson. But I think this idea that there is an autonomous general manager in every single organization that operates based solely on how he sees the team moving and what he wants, that's gone the way of the dodo bird. I mean, Doug McLean was talking about this last week on Hockey Central. Whether you're Ken Holland, Brian Burke, or Scott Housen, before you make any kind of move, who's your first phone call to? Like, big move I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you gotta go to your owner.
Expensive move.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you still have to – the days of running it – in the old days, you still phoned your owner, too. You still phone and said, "Here's what I'm doing." Well, it's your decision. Go ahead. And now the question becomes is, what are the budget ramifications? That whole business side of these companies, not clubs, these companies, has totally changed. And there aren't many people. I mean, I was trying to think back. I mean, Glenn Sather? Might Glenn Sather be one of those guys that can actually do something and then phone Jim Dolan and say, "Here's what I've done"?
Well, that's to the previous point about fostering a relationship with owner, and that's why
that's right.
Glenn, as long as Jimmy Dolan's there, Glenn Sather is there, married at the hip, regardless of what happens.
But Brian had that similar situation before the change, I would argue, that he had a budget. You know, he was president and general manager.
Yeah, he had that person who had his back and before ownership, and that was Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Petty had Brian's back. I mean, even reading Richard's comments late in the week, how disappointed he was. Because a lot, and I got thinking about this on the weekend as well, a lot of what Richard has created as a company is not slowly, but quickly disappearing from a corporate side. And I think there's got to be people wondering what is next and how it happens. And we knew there would be changes. You just have to wonder how rapid the changes will come now.
Curious that the press conference would happen, that type of press conference at the Air Canada Center. I'm watching this and I'm saying to myself,
he's still an employee.
Yeah. He's still at the keys work.
But at the parking.
After that press conference, should the keys still work you're Rogers or Bell?
What was curious was that Brian said that he had suggested to Dale Aspin and Larry, when he was told he was being relieved of the other duties, that he should be or could be senior advisor to hockey operations. But the day of the release came out that he was terminated, it's said advisor to the board.
Right.
Which we all kind of chuckled at, because the board that just said it doesn't like you and terminated you, now you're going to advise them? Not so much.
Yeah, and I mean
why the confusion there?
I don't think there was any confusion on the board side.
No, I don't. I think you're right there.
I don't think that there was any confusion, and I whether it was, you know, the one thing that I think the three of us can agree on is that even though we weren't in the midst of the vote, there is no way that Larry Tannenbaum wanted to do this.
Mm-hmm.
The vote at the board level was probably 4-2, and then they said, "We have to make it unanimous. Larry, you lose," and it's 6-0. Just from being with him in New York, the first thing he said to the reporters was, "Well, it's a board decision, and I'm a member of the board." Ooh, boy, I'll tell you what, that is.
I don't want to do this, but I'll go along.
That's right. And then inside the hotel, when he said, "I just lost a friend." I mean, that was really, to me, very telling how emotional Larry was about the situation. And I think with a wishful thinking might have been on Larry and Dale's part Dale Lastman, who's Larry's lawyer and is the sixth member of the board. I think that wishful thinking was, yeah, we'll keep you around and you can help Dave. But to me, it did. First of all, I'm not sure that the position makes sense anyway, other than just try to not lose face. And mm-hmm. people, I think, are a little smarter than that.
What's next for Brian Burke? Some have said it's a pretty easy transition to go back to the National Hockey League and work there where he was once employed. He has done plenty of outside Maple Leaf work on behalf of the NHL, perhaps the biggest one being testifying on behalf of the NHL in the
but he didn't do that. He did that on behalf as general manager and president of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, because they were trying.
Well, that was his title, but
well, you know, I wouldn't make too much out of that one. I mean, listen, he has been a confidant of the commissioner for a long time, and
could you see him going back?
I could at a certain point going back. I do think that you know they'd have to rearrange some of the chairs on the boat, but I would think that that's a possibility. I tell you what, I think Brian should take a year off. I think he should take a bloody year off, go away, recharge the batteries. You know, get to know his family again. You know, go to Fiji and sit in the sun.
It's been a very intense 4 years.
It has been awful on him. And that's the part, that's the compassionate part of everyone saying, Brian, come on, you know, don't go back and take a job tomorrow. Are you stupid? Take some time, recharge yourself, rebuild your reputation as a manager is what it is. It's not going to change six or 12 months from now. Go away, reconnect, come back. And if he did that and announced I'm coming back, I think we'd be shocked at how many people would say, hey, listen, he's our guy. Boom, you know.
Mm-hmm. You agree, Scott?
Yeah, I really do. I think he needs that time to kind of decompress a little bit. There's just so much has happened in his world, and there's been tragedy, obviously, as we all know, in his world over these 4 years. And then, you know, it's a tough thing when you go down the road, when you lose a job, especially one you really covet and want it so badly. That's not an easy thing to deal with. And I do think you need time. And a lot of people in the real world, if you will, that go through job changes will take that severance time or that half a year to, just as John says, recharge the batteries, think about themselves, and try and grow from the experience.
The question,
money's not a problem.
No,
he's done all right. The one thing that I have been asking from a Dave Nonis point of view now, does he need to, or is it incumbent upon Dave Nonis to do something to distinguish himself from Brian Burke? To say, this is not just a continuation of the Brian Burke vision of this team, and I need to do something to make sure people don't think that I am Brian Burke-like, that this is my team and this is my direction now. Does he need to do something symbolically to indicate that this is his team?
I don't know about symbolically. You just do the right thing. And whatever that next move is, because this is a team that you just can't start moving people to say, I'm going to make a statement. You just make whatever the right move is for that team. And I think he's carried himself in such a way since the announcement on Wednesday that he said things that are much different than Brian, that he's tried to distinguish that he is different in style as a manager.
Make no mistake, over the last 3.5 years since Dave came on the job too, he's been instrumental in a lot of the decisions
crucial.
That have gone.
Oh, yeah.
And more, and in many ways, there have people that said, by the way, Dave Nonis is the general manager. Brian is the president CEO of the organization and may give last approval on things. But a lot of the spade work, a lot of the day-to-day stuff have been sitting on Dave Nonis's desk. And the biggest issue for Dave in many ways is that he hasn't lived here. You know, his family was in Vancouver, and they've since moved to New Hampshire. The question is, as general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, do you need to live in Toronto?
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to be a challenge that I would suspect that has to be addressed next summer.
I think you do, don't you?
Totally.
You got to be around that team every day,
to some degree. Lessons learned. You also, and again, this is, I know what it's going to appear like. July 5th is free agency day.
Be there.
You have to be in Toronto. You have to be with your staff. I don't care about technology, but you have to create the optics that I am steering the ship. And for this organization, between numerous opportunities with, you know, broken fax machines and Pat Quinn being in Vancouver and Bill Waters being at the cottage, Brian Burke being in Afghanistan, this is something that this has actually occurred more than once in the last 15 years in this organization. Dave Nonis, if he's going to be the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs for longer than 48 games, he better be here and better be accessible to everybody.
First definition of any gig, show up.
Yeah.
Take a break. We'll come back and talk about some of the RFAs that have signed. Michael Delzato looking your way. RFAs that haven't signed. PK Subban looking yours. And a big-name Montreal Flashpoint player who's been told to go home awaiting a buyout. Hockey Central at noon continues. Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on Sportsnet.
Featherlite is the number one ladder used by the pros, and here's why. Featherlite knows that you depend on your ladder to be safe and to perform properly whether on the job or at home. So they constantly strive to improve the utility and safety of their ladders, not only to meet but exceed industry standards. Featherlite has been building trust into every ladder it makes for over 60 years. No wonder the pros recommend them. The pros know, and Canadian pros pick Featherlite ladders. Safer, tougher, Canadian since 1949.
Now more Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard. John Shannon around the table alongside Scott Morrison.
Who are you in for, Scott?
Are you Doug?
I've
or are you
lost
Nick
track.
Today? Who are you in for, John? Who are you today?
I really,
the role of
I really, Doug or Nick? I don't ever want to be Doug, but seriously, I think I'm closer to Doug.
How about this? Seriously, Montreal is still without the services of PK Subban. Dallas, same without Jamie Benn. And Colorado, without Ryan O'Reilly. Michael Delzato signing over the weekend, 2-year ticket, $5.1 million.
That's about right for him. 2 years, though.
2.55.
Yeah.
I mean, Delzato really didn't exactly have, you know, much leverage in the deal at all, coming off the entry-level deal. Wants to play Stanley. The one thing that Glenn...
That'll be an average salary next year in the NHL. 2.5. About that. It'll be about that.
2.55?
Next year. That'll be about average salary next year. Not right now, but next season.
He didn't have much leverage in that one. But the one thing Slats can sell is we can you know, pretty much guarantee you a shot, a legitimate shot at winning the Stanley Cup.
Oh, yeah. Well, and let's face it, may not have had leverage, but after the roller coaster he went through the year before last, and his role with the team has really changed and improved, and you know, he finally understood John Tortorella.
Yeah.
And so that does help.
That's progress in itself.
I know.
The candy cane stick hockey player is still back with the New York Rangers. Well, Jamie Benn, PK Subban, Ryan O'Reilly. Which one surprises you guys the most?
Still without the deal.
These are significant young players.
Yeah.
And the mantra has always been over the past, well, since this most recent CBA was in effect, sign, lock up your long guys long term. Mm-hmm. Do it because these are the guys you build around. No O'Reilly, no Ben, no Subban.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, we have our biases now after spending, you know, the last couple of months with PK and knowing what an upstanding young guy he is. That's the one thing that I did not know PK until he came here. And, you know, you'd like to have him on your team as a person, let alone with his ability as a hockey player. I became a real Jamie Benn fan last year. I thought he became, in many ways, he could easily be the face of that franchise when you consider, you know, Jágr and Whitney are there, and Benn is supposed to be, by the time their contracts retire.
And if you look at what Dallas did, not unlike Philadelphia, bring in Jaromir Jágr, improve Claude Giroux.
Yeah.
The mantra, the idea this year was bring in Jágr to help Jamie Benn.
Yeah, and so I guess of all those guys, I'm surprised. I am surprised with the Benn situation more than any, because I also think that of the three franchises, if anybody needs to make an impact quicker on the ice for the franchise, it's the Dallas Stars.
Oh, guaranteed.
I mean, with Tom Gilardi, he invested a lot of money. He didn't get the exact CBA that he wanted with his organization. It's going to take him a little longer to recoup those dollars if he ever will. And, you know, Jamie Benn's a big key. And I would suspect that that's exactly what the agents have said to him. Said, listen, Jamie's the future.
And they almost made the playoffs last year. It wasn't until, what, the last week when Dallas – and then the schedule cut up.
Well, they screwed it up too. There was a couple of games in that last 10 days. I can't believe I remember this now. There was a couple of games in that last 10 days at home they screwed up. Mm-hmm. Had they won, they would have been in the driver's seat, and that way they didn't have to worry about backing in.
So how much do we think the new landscape – is affecting these negotiations? That's, I mean, because you're managing for next year too at this point, knowing that the cap is going down, right?
I mean,
the guys you got to have, but you're still going to make all the economics work.
You're not signing based on this year's prorated $70 million salary cap. You're looking at 64.
64.3 is where that number is, and you have to look through where your numbers are going to be and who you're going to buy out next summer, if you're going to buy anybody out. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not forced to buy people out. But the stories that Subban is, they're $3 million apart in their offer, or almost $3 million apart in their offer, $6 million versus $3 million. $6 million is a lot of money for a player of that stature, I think, at this point. And I think the one thing I would say about the lockout this time around was that a lot of teams financially spent a lot of time going through what their dollars and how many dollars they would spend and what they would do with the dollars and how much more controlled they have to be with their dollars. And I think that that's probably the downside of not signing before the CBA, before the lockout occurred.
And Montreal, pre-Gomez buyout, were at $60 million and change with, I think, 13 players signed for next year. So there were going to be some finessing to be done there.
But if you look at that back end, who is it all built around? For the future, it's PK Subban.
Mm-hmm.
It's not built around Josh Georges. It's built around PK.
Well, but here's the thing. If my bias is I like PK. I want PK to sign.
Yeah.
But if you look at what that organization has and the depth that that organization has, and what you don't want to be doing is giving PK all that money when you got Beaulieu, you got Tenorti, you got Ellis, you got a boatload
of those guys are as dynamic as PK Subban.
Dynamic, no, but you know there is an expectation that at least two of them are going to be as good players. I mean, the thing about PK, PK is the third dimension, right? It's how many jerseys PK sell. I mean, PK's on the verge of, and I know we've used it already with one guy, but PK's on the verge of being a brand himself.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I mean, remember when he came up and all the T-shirts ever came up for the playoffs and how many PK Subban shirts they sold? PK is that extra dimension that every hockey team dreams of, is somebody that has a smile on his face and people can identify. And man, oh man, he, in so many ways, is he the face of the franchise.
Did you see that hit? Did you see that shot? Did you see that goal?
And even the celebration and even just that player identification. I mean, number 76 he's got a great future, but at the same time, Marc Bergevin, this is his first big test.
That's the question.
First big test.
And you're setting the bar for the rest of your young players
coming up. That's my point. You're setting it for all these kids who are saying, oh, hey, PK gets the big one, baby. And you know what? And I'm sure Marc Bergevin's saying, holy smokes, if we do this with PK 4 years from now, we got Tenorti, we got Ellis, we got all these guys.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, that's a real issue.
What about O'Reilly out in Colorado, the former Erie Otter captain, and last year for a good chunk of the year?
You're not biased about this, are you?
No, I'm totally biased because I love this player. I've loved him since he played junior for Sherry Bassa. I love Ryan O'Reilly.
Maybe we should just sit back and you can answer this question.
Yeah.
Well, the question is Ryan O'Reilly great or really great? John? Scott? But at times last year, that line with Landeskog and Downey was best in the NHL. Hard to believe that Colorado was – unless
O'Reilly's shooting
for the moon. Again,
it's a team that's got a budget. They got a budget.
Yeah.
And – a lot of young players.
And their focus, let's face it, their focus was, as good as O'Reilly was, as good as Matt Duchene was, that their focus changed. And the focus of their franchise is Landeskog. You know that as well as I do.
Yeah, that's why he's the captain.
He's going to be the face of the franchise for a long time. So it's not that O'Reilly doesn't deserve the money. It's how much of that money does he deserve. And I'm sure it'll get done, just as I was sure there would be. It has to get done. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the answer for all three guys. I don't think these three young guys want to sit out a 48-game season. And I don't think Dallas, for instance, I don't think Dallas can afford to not have Ben in the lineup.
Oh, no, second leading scorer.
Yeah. And that's
and you got to win some games.
That's the point too. If they both, if any of these teams go 2-6 out of the gate,
you're done.
And these players aren't signed.
That's a gamble,
right? I mean, it's a risk on both sides. Because to your point, the players want to get in there, and the players do want to play. It's a shortened season; they want to be able to make some of their money back. But Montreal goes 2-6. Dallas goes 2-5.
I don't think Montreal is the same pressure point as the other two. You have to sell tickets, and to sell tickets, you have to win some games and sell some hope.
It's funny you say that. I you're absolutely right from a business perspective, because Montreal's going to do fine.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. Those passionate Montreal Canadiens fans, if they're not that good, if Markov can't play 48 games, and then the pressure becomes massive for them to re-sign Subban.
Where do you see Montreal?
I see them 13th or 12th or 13th.
Yeah, okay.
What did you make of the Gomez news yesterday coming out of Montreal? Stay home. We don't want you injured because we're buying you out in the summer. It's unfortunate. I hate that this CBA can back a team into doing this. I understand it from a business point of view.
Well, here we see a player gets buried again.
Yeah.
Somehow, some way, he's getting buried.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's – but here's the thing. I mean, is this grievable?
I've been going back and forth with people on this.
Yeah.
Some say that this is where the NHL Players Association should really dig in and say, hold on a second here. It's not based on performance. It's not based on anything other than you don't want him to get injured because you're buying him out. Other sides will say, hold on a second here. He's not going to miss a single penny.
No.
He's getting all of the money that he's owed.
No, but here for me, and if I'm a member of the Players Association and I'm sitting there and saying, listen, we understand you don't want him. We understand the contract is arduous. But he's got to be able to skate. He's got to have access to the doctors. He's got to have everything that he would have in order to stay in shape so he can get another contract.
Have a fighting chance next year.
Yes.
He can miss a full season.
That would be my argument. I mean, and Wade Redden's in the same boat. Wade Redden's in the same boat. It was, you send him to Connecticut, that's one thing. He's playing. But, I mean, for Scott Gomez to go sit on a beach in Cabo, or wherever he would go, or whether he'd go back to Vancouver or go to Anchorage. To me, if I'm the Players Association, he has to have the ability to use the tools of the trade in order to stay in shape. So does that allow him to use the dressing room at the practice arena?
Access the trainers.
Bingo. That, to me, would be, at least in my mind, the only grounds they would have. I mean, they can't make him play, but they can at least try to keep him in shape.
And you're not doing it for disciplinary or behavioral reasons, so there shouldn't be a reason why he shouldn't be allowed to be around some degree.
Not around in team practice,
but have the facility later in the day.
Correct. Give him I don't want him with my club.
No.
I don't want him with my club, but I would say, he has to have the right to stay in shape, in my mind.
We'll wrap up. Thanks to John Shannon, Scott Morrison, Gord Selleck, and Rick Natras, new Leafs pre- and post-game hosts. That kicks off Friday. Leafs face off against the Habs. Pre-game program beginning Saturday, rather, at 5 o'clock Eastern, going right up till puck drop just after 7 o'clock. Thanks for joining us. Back tomorrow, more Hockey Central at noon.